Welcome back to the Rarely Heard Fabry Disease Podcast, a 9-part series devoted to Fabry disease. Throughout this series, we hear from Fabry disease experts, patients and caregivers who share practical advice, insights and perspectives on living with this rare disease. Rarely Heard Fabry Disease is initiated and funded by Takeda Pharmaceuticals and is intended for an international audience outside the USA. In this episode, we will first talk with Martinez, a patient living with Fabry disease. We will then hear from Dr. Charles Denaro, a Fabry disease expert and familiar voice on the podcast. They will share their experiences and tips on managing chronic pain, fatigue, and the neurological aspects of the disease. Hi, and welcome, Martinez. Thank you so much for joining us today. Now, could we please have you introduce yourself to our audience?
Hello to our rarely heard listeners. My name is Martinez, and I'm a patient with Fabry disease. I work at a clinical research company, and this company helps to deliver new therapies for patients. And in my free time, I enjoy spending time in nature with my friends, sometimes hiking, playing board games, or simply enjoying life with my girlfriend. I am as well a member of the Lithuanian Association of People with Organ Transplants. The association is a member of the Fabry International Network.
Now, to start, could you please tell us about your journey with Fabry disease?
Yes, sure. The journey was a really long one, and it took around 20 years till I got my diagnosis. So I'm now 36 years old, so I have the diagnosis for 16 years only. Symptoms started really early when I was 4 years old. I started being ill from time to time, having fever, being tired, and sometimes I spent weeks or even months in hospitals. Then angiokeratomas, these skin lesions, appeared, which is red tiny dots on my body. And as well, the gastrointestinal disturbances started, which were really big daily issues. And after some time, when I was maybe 12 or 13 years old, I started experiencing pain, a huge, terrible pain, which was like a burning in my hands and feet. So this was the most terrible symptom for me. It was limiting me. It was not allowing me to do my everyday activities, not to be able to play with my friends, going to school sometimes. And well, growing up, this pain became bigger and bigger and bigger, and I couldn't live a normal life with this pain. When other people were playing outside, climbing a tree, running, laughing, and doing all kinds of stuff children usually do, I was often sitting at home and experiencing episodes of burning pain. And it was excruciating pain. And as I grew older, I had this pain not only in hands, but in my arms, as well in my knees and all other areas. Other symptoms like angiokeratomas, and the gastrointestinal symptoms, they remain, but sometimes they are milder, sometimes they are more harsh. But it's still an everyday issue. So every listener of this podcast should understand that what I've been telling all this time, it's my own experience. And people are really, really different. And any other Fabry patient might feel different symptoms. And any other patient might feel different level of pain, different level of gastrointestinal issues, or any other symptoms.
Yes, and thank you for sharing this with us, Martinez. Now, as this episode focuses on the neurological aspects of Fabry disease, could you go into more detail about your experience with the pain associated with Fabry disease?
Yes, I really had pain, as I mentioned earlier, in my extremities, in my hands and feet, and as well in sometimes even to elbows and knees. And of course, these gastrointestinal symptoms are related to pain. So yeah, the stomachache, for example, it is really, really a bad pain when I cannot sometimes go outside, you know, to work, or couldn't go to school even. And the Fabry crisis, which pain in my extremities are mostly provoked by exercise or physical movement. So when I do some strong exercises, when I lift something, when I do some cycling or walk long distance, I start experiencing this pain. And sometimes, yeah, it really starts without any provocation. So it just comes out of the blue.
People often ask me, what type of the pain is that? And, you know, you cannot see the pain. You cannot tell anyone what pain you experience. But the pain is when you switch on the stove, which is really hot. So imagine that you need to touch it and you cannot remove your hand or foot from it. You have to hold it, you know. And this is, I think, the best explanation of the pain. Or if you have a fireplace at home, you put the hand as near to the fire as you can, and you will feel the same thing like I feel. And regarding the duration of the pain, it might be any duration. Sometimes I feel it for hours. Sometimes in my earlier life, when I did not get the treatment, I would feel it for a few days even, few full days. Now I sometimes experience very, very short periods. Like one hand or one feet might start hurting. Then I just find another position. I try to maybe take something cold in my hand. And yeah, it gets better. Sometimes it can be one strong episode in a month and many milder episodes, you know, like every day or twice a week. It varies very, very much.
And to mention one more thing is that I do not tolerate heat when I go, for example, to hot areas of the world. I must spend my time in the shade.
Yes, it sounds like the pain can be a really challenging aspect of living with a disease, especially as a child. As you have experienced that yourself, are there any signs you think parents should be aware of that could indicate their child has Fabry disease?
Sure, there are signs. The most important thing is the understanding of parents that if the child does not want to do something, if the child is always tired or is crying, it doesn't mean that child is bad. The child might be experiencing pain in his or her extremities, stomach, or other areas of the body. So sometimes children don't know how to say that they have pain. Or sometimes parents, they might think that the child does not want to do anything. Maybe the child is lazy. But you cannot say every time that the child is lazy. You might just, as a parent, you might try to think, maybe the child is ill. Maybe he has or she has a disease. And regarding the signs, the symptoms, you may try to consult the doctor. Maybe the doctor will know the disease. Maybe the doctor will send for consultation to other specialists. So it's very important to see your child and try to understand what is happening.
One more thing is angiokeratomas, which I mentioned earlier. And sometimes they appear when the child is 6 or 7 years old. And persons like parents or relatives would see them on the body of the child. And they sometimes can ask, what is this? You know, and I think that question must be brought to the doctors, to the physicians, who might know what is this. Or if they don't know, they will consult with other specialists. This as well regards to stomach aches, because when child goes to the toilet often, maybe he looks like not happy about something. What is happening with this child? So you can try to ask, are you having some trouble with your stomach? Are you going to the toilet so often that you feel something wrong? If the child tells you the information, you can bring it to the physicians as well. And when the child is younger, I think mother or father would really see that the child is not calm. You know, he's like moving a lot. Something maybe is happening with his belly, with his stomach. I think that's most important things to know.
Right. That's very helpful advice for our audience. Could you please tell us more about how pain affects your daily life or activities?
When walking a short distance, it's all right. You know, I don't feel the pain. Like kilometers to kilometers. Sometimes, yeah, 2 kilometers is too much, but sometimes it's okay. And when I go, for example, to the museums to see any other interesting places, I start feeling, you know, this pain in my hands, in my feet. And this really hurts my attention, my ability to see, not like
eyes are bad, but all the attention goes to the pain and to the places where it arises. So it really does not let you to concentrate to leisure activities or to work activities. But sometimes there are days like I just sit, for example, do some stuff for my job, and I have the crisis because maybe it's hot outside, and I start feeling the pain, and the concentration is going lower and lower. So I need to just do a pause, to make the pain lower. So I will maybe touch something cold. I will maybe drink some cold water. I will maybe lie down for a while. You know, I will try to get rid of this pain and to get back my concentration levels and abilities to think to my everyday level.
I imagine living with chronic pain must take a toll on your mental and emotional well-being. Could you share with us how the pain has affected you, and also perhaps share any tips on coping with pain for other patients?
Of course, pain affects mental health, just like an example earlier. So these crises are really very intense and very painful, I would say. My thoughts are diverted to only one thing in that moment. So sometimes, yes, sometimes the pain is not so strong, but not so harsh. But when it's really, really very strong, this intensive crisis, so it's very, very difficult to concentrate to anything, you know, whenever and wherever you are, in studies, at work, or just simply doing nothing, you know. It controls, you know, all the thoughts, and just you simply run out of time while struggling with that pain. And sometimes even after the pain crisis, when it's over, you will need enough time to recover because you really feel bad after that. And often during this period, I start wondering why I have to go through this pain crisis and when it will be over for me. And I always believe that future is better. So the best way to cope with that is to accept that this is a part of your life and to adjust life to the situation. Of course, we have to find what works best for us to relieve pain. It might be some physical factors, like myself, cool temperatures, maybe rubbing in hands and feet with maybe towel with other hand, you know. And of course, there are some medication which might help to relieve pain. Of course, every patient should consult the doctor or the physician to find the most suitable medications to relieve the pain.
Now, chronic fatigue is another common neurological issue affecting many Fabry disease patients. Is this something you yourself have experienced?
When you do lots of physical and emotional and then psychological efforts, you get sometimes exhausted. And everybody knows that, I think. So this exhaustion is more often seen in us, in the Fabry patients. And like it's called chronic fatigue. It accompanies this chronic fatigue me all the time, but sometimes it's milder, sometimes it's worse, sometimes, you know, very, very rarely I experience that I don't want to do anything. I want to stay wherever I am. It's better to be lying in bed and, I don't know, listening to some music, to reading some book or something, and not willing to do, you know, to wash dishes, like to go somewhere, to read some intense literature like science or something. And as I mentioned, it's not the same thing every day. Sometimes I feel rested enough, I feel active, but there are days when the fatigue really, really is not tolerable.
That must be really quite challenging. What advice would you give Fabry patients who suffer from chronic fatigue?
It's not like fatigue schedule. Like it's not written that from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. I am in fatigue, and then from 10 a.m. you know, I rested enough. But when you are planning tasks, you have to keep in mind that there might be some moments when you cannot do whatever you plan. So this must be kept in mind, really. And when you have this fatigue, you must, in my opinion, you must change activities when necessary. You take maybe one mental activity, another activity might be physical, and changing activities, I think, really, really, really works. And of course, having enough rest. If you can go to bed at
10 or even 9 p.m., I think it's a really, really good idea not to spend your midnight doing something. I think having enough rest is crucial, and it helps to cope with chronic fatigue. It doesn't necessarily mean that you had good sleep. This is like your days will be good, you know. But I think it would be worse if you don't have enough rest.
Yes, I see. Well, before we finish, would you please give our audience a summary of this episode?
First of all, it's early recognition of the disease. Early diagnosis is the important thing. Everybody should be aware of symptoms, and you must bring those symptoms to the physicians who would tell you if it might be related to Fabry disease, and the treatment should be given as early as possible, not to develop more symptoms. Regarding pain management is really very important to ensure a good quality of life and that pain would be relieved or the situation of life would be easy enough that this patient would not exert physically very hard. I would advise all the patients to find some physical aid for themselves to cope with this pain. So it might be warm thing, it might be cold thing, it might be stroking your hand or rubbing it with some tissue or some towel even. Everybody, I think, should try as many things as possible and find the most suitable for him or her. And if it's insufficient, if you still feel the pain, I would say that you would need to approach the physician and maybe you will think of any medication which would help to relieve the pain. The other important thing is fatigue. And regarding this, I would really emphasize that you should have enough rest to make the fatigue easier, and you should change the activity. When you do something physical, you should change it to mental and vice versa. And if the fatigue is really, really hard, so I think the patient should have some additional rest during daytime. This is what helps for me.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us and for being here today, Martinez. It was really wonderful talking with you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now we move on to the second part of the episode, where we will speak to Fabry disease expert Dr. Charles De Niro. Hello and welcome back, Dr. De Niro. Could you please introduce yourself to the audience?
Hi, I'm Associate Professor Charles De Niro, and I'm very happy to now join this podcast episode. I work as a general internal medicine specialist and clinical pharmacologist at the Royal Brisbane and Women's Hospital, as well as working for the University of Queensland. I am the director of the Department of Internal Medicine and Aged Care at the hospital. In addition, I teach third and fourth year medical students, do a lot of work in assessment, and have a few research projects looking at how to improve the use of medicines and avoid adverse medication problems. For the past 20 years, I've been looking after adult patients with Anderson Fabry disease for the state of Queensland and also the northern part of the state of New South Wales in Australia. In the past, I've been on the Australian Commonwealth Health Department's Fabry Advisory Committee, and currently I'm a member of the Medical Advisory Committee for the patient organisation in Australia, namely Fabry Australia. I've been involved in creating guidelines for the treatment of Fabry disease in Australia and also involved in a few scientific studies in Fabry disease. I was recently involved in a large screening study looking for Fabry disease in 3,000 patients in Queensland with kidney disease.
Here in this episode, we're discussing the neurological aspects of Fabry disease. In the first part, we heard from Martinez, who shared his personal experiences of living with a chronic pain associated with Fabry disease. Now, could we please have you tell us how pain usually manifests in patients with Fabry disease?
So pain in patients with Fabry disease can be described as a chronic sensation. In other words, it's there all the time, and can feel like burning or tingling or shooting pain. And it can also cause abdominal pain or tummy pain and discomfort. This is usually seen in patients who have a classic or severe mutation, and it's much less common or not even at all seen in patients who have the non-classical or milder mutation, which is also called late onset disease. So these classic patients can suffer acute pain crisis that can last for hours to days and actually can cause the patient to become bedbound. Patients commonly complain of a burning or pins and needles pain in the hands and or feet, and it's sometimes also described as stabbing or shooting. They can experience a background of constant burning pain in the extremities while going around and doing their daily activities of living. There are a number of triggers that make this pain worse. These include rapid temperature change, especially hot weather, strenuous physical exercise activity, and fever. And clearly, this pain can affect your daily activities of doing exercise or playing sports. In young children, it's very problematic, and it can be very hard to pick up the pain symptoms in these children. They may just have intermittent, inconsolable crying. The children could just point to the hands and feet if they have pain, and they may complain or dislike wearing socks or closed shoes. So for them, exercise and sports can be very difficult. Exercise often worsens the pain in their feet and hands. And some of these patients also have reduced sweating, so they become very overheated very quickly. So this situation can make things very difficult for a child at school. They can be ostracized, bullied, and may want to avoid school. Often, and the patients tell me, that the symptoms as they were growing up were dismissed as growing pains. They often tell me that they seek cold water and put their hands and feet in to help relieve these symptoms. In fact, quite a lot of children with classic mutations also have non-specific abdominal pain, and this occurs often after meals with associated bloating and diarrhea.
Right. And what causes patients to experience this chronic pain?
This type of pain is due to nerve irritation or nerve damage, and the technical name is called acroparesthesia. And it is often the first and most reported symptoms in patients with classic mutations, even in patients less than 5 years of age. The nerve damage increases to the point where the nerve function is actually lost. The nerves in the skin actually die. So for many patients, and I must emphasize not all, that as these patients approach adulthood or early adulthood, the pain can lessen and in some cases even go away. However, there are many other patients whose pain continues lifelong despite the fact that these nerve fibers are dying. And this is due to poorly understood pain circuits that are permanently turned on in the spinal cord and the brain. Now, since the nerves have died, these adult patients often have lost the temperature sensation in their feet, legs, even in their hands and arms. And they're at risk of burning themselves as they do not perceive or feel hot surfaces.
Oh, I see. Before a patient is diagnosed with Fabry disease, are these symptoms often misdiagnosed as other conditions?
Yes, when I talk to my patients and they look back on their childhood, they were given many different ideas of what this pain could be caused by. It's often misdiagnosed as arthritis, growing pains, or even psychogenic pains that you want to avoid school and you've invented these pains. The abdominal pain and the pain crisis in the tummy are also often under-recognized and can sometimes be mistaken for other conditions such as acute appendicitis or irritable bowel syndrome with the pain and diarrhea after meals.
Yes, well, Martinez mentioned that he has several ways to self-manage his pain to cope with daily life. However, are there any warning signs or situations where patients should seek medical attention?
Yes, of course. One instance is when patients have a high fever or feeling unwell. It's important to keep well hydrated and avoid further triggers such as hot and cold temperatures. Patients should seek medical advice immediately if they have pain that is worse than usual or not improved with the usual pain medications that they use, or if they have unexplained abdominal pain, vomiting and diarrhea, which is worse than usual, which could lead to dehydration or a worsening of the Fabry crisis pain. Of course, the pain, especially abdominal or tummy pain, could be due to something else. So medical assessment when things are not usual is important. We also can measure pain and understand the trend, whether the pain is getting better and worse, using pain questionnaires. And there's actually a Fabry-specific pediatric questionnaire for children.
Now, chronic pain can be incredibly detrimental to patients' daily life. Well, what options are available for patients to manage this pain?
Yes, of course. Pain should be and can be managed to minimize its impact on education, social life, work, and other activities. The first step is to try and avoid factors that make the pain worse, like getting overheated or excessive exercise. Of course, we all must exercise, and of course, children must participate in school and school sports. If the pain is severe or causing absences from school or work or affecting sleep, then it's important to see your doctor and preferably also your Fabry disease specialist. There are special medications that can considerably dampen down this type of pain. However, these medications don't always work, or they don't get rid of the pain completely, and sometimes they can cause side effects. So in these complex situations, it's wise to be referred to see a pain specialist or perhaps a neurologist. Now, of course, how we perceive how bad a pain depends on our outlook on life and our current mental status. If you are depressed or worried and things are bad, then pain will always feel much worse. It's, of course, a two-way street because pain can also cause low mood and anxiety, particularly if it's preventing you from doing things. So severe or chronic pain in Fabry disease is known to cause clinical depression. In addition, stress could also be a trigger for Fabry pain. So psychological support is an important aspect for the management of these symptoms. And while patients might be reluctant to share these feelings, clinicians and doctors do need to explore this side of Fabry disease. They have to be mindful and ensure that the questions relating to mental health are empathetic and allow patients to have the time to express themselves. For patients of mine with additional psychological stress, anxiety, depression, I would always recommend them to see a psychologist. There is some evidence for benefit from psychological evidence-based interventions, such as cognitive behavior therapy. It's often called CBT. In addition, there are many other mental health organizations and charities that the patients can contact as well.
Earlier, we heard from Martinez, where he shared his experience of how chronic fatigue impacts his life. Do you have any advice for patients to help manage their chronic fatigue?
Fabry disease is commonly associated with chronic fatigue and other related issues like excessive daytime sleepiness, sleep disturbance, headaches, and migraines. There's no doubt fatigue is a common symptom that my patients complain of. Again, we see this more often in patients who have the classical or severe mutation. And there's no doubt as well that it can be really difficult to improve. Now, the first step by any doctor looking after a Fabry patient who is suffering fatigue is to make sure it's not due to something else. There are a number of common conditions that can cause fatigue, and a careful clinical assessment and some tests are needed to rule out these other common causes. Of course, Fabry patients do suffer, like we all do, common conditions and diseases. It's also important to review all the medications a patient is on because they can contribute to tiredness. I advise my patients to improve their sleep hygiene and apply stress management techniques. Some tips for better sleep include being consistent by going to bed and waking up at the same time every day if you can. Avoid large meals, caffeine, and alcohol before bedtime. And of course, make sure your bedroom is dark, quiet, relaxing. Get rid of bright lights and a comfortable temperature for sleep. There are some studies that show that for some people, antidepressant therapy or the psychologist supervised cognitive behavior therapy program can help the fatigue. Also, in some individuals, a graded, slow, individualized exercise program, making sure we don't go too fast or too early, can assist some patients. So the aim of all these programs and treatment suggestions is to make sure our patients are able to do the normal activities of daily life, maintain their relationships with their loved ones, and can return to work if that's applicable. In addition, and I have to admit, there aren't many trials that I'm familiar with, many of my patients on enzyme replacement therapy, and I have to say not all, but many often tell me that their energy has improved.
I see. So apart from pain and chronic fatigue, can Fabry disease lead to other serious neurological complications?
Yes, unfortunately, Fabry disease can also affect the brain and cause neurological complications like a stroke, a mini stroke, which is also called a transient ischemic attack, blood clots to the vessels that would cause the stroke, and rarely even bleeding in the brain. Patients with Fabry disease, this is particularly the classical mutation, may have 10 to 12 times greater risk of ischemic strokes than the general population. And when I use the word ischemic, it means a blood vessel has been blocked, and that blood vessel, which is giving blood to a particular part of the brain, has been damaged. In addition, we also see patients can develop what's called white matter changes, and these can be seen on head scans, especially brain MRIs. Now, white matter is the wires, if you like, that connect the nerve cells in the brain in the spinal cord. And like all electrical wires, these nerve cell projections have insulation around them. And it is this insulation that can be affected in Fabry disease, causing white matter changes. And so that's a warning sign that the brain is being affected. It's also clear in a number of studies that the older Fabry patients can have memory problems and some difficulties with complex tasks and decision-making. Now, it may not be obvious, but then the only way you really can detect this is using very detailed neuropsychological tests to show up these changes. In some studies, and I have to admit, not all, but in some studies, the more white matter changes that can be seen on these brain scans, the more likely we can find these mild or minor cognition issues with detailed testing. Fabry disease, however, does not cause dementia.
Right. And what steps can patients take to reduce the risk of serious complications? Are there any early signs patients should be aware of?
Okay, so patients who have pacemakers or rhythm disturbances such as atrial fibrillation, and again, high blood pressure, excessive smoking, diabetes, high cholesterol, all have an increased risk of having these minor strokes, the transient ischemic attack, or actually a full stroke. So because these ischemic strokes are due to one of the blood vessels in the brain being blocked, this again emphasizes that we should do everything possible to keep our blood vessels healthy. So I know I sound like a cracked record, but it's very important to maintain a healthy lifestyle, keep our blood vessels healthy. So no smoking, low cholesterol, keep a good blood pressure, good healthy body weight and good diet and exercise. All of these things are vitally important for your blood vessels. Now, symptoms of stroke include changes in the speech and can include difficulty in understanding others, limb weakness, loss of balance, dizziness, visual problems such as double vision or loss of vision, a tingling sensation in the arms or legs, etc. And if you are experiencing any of these symptoms, even if they're brief, you should seek medical help immediately. When we find that we have patients that have an increased risk of stroke, we usually start them on a medicine to stop the platelets from working. So it reduces the risk of blood clotting. In addition, we would give treatment for high cholesterol and medications for blood pressure control. If you develop the heart rhythm problem of atrial fibrillation, as I've said in episode 3, this is a marker for much higher risk of stroke. And in that situation, there is good evidence that we need to stop the blood from clotting.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. De Niro, and sharing your insights with us. That was really helpful. Before we end, could you please summarize the key takeaways from the episode?
So I'd love to give a summary of some of the points that I've made in this podcast. Patients with a classical mutation can get many symptoms. These symptoms often start in childhood and include nerve pain in the hands and feet, abdominal pain and diarrhea after meals, significant fatigue, lack of sweating, and therefore the patients can become very easily overheated with exercise, and unfortunately have a higher risk of having a stroke. These symptoms and conditions are much less common in patients with a non-classical mutation or a late onset mutation. However, I hope I've demonstrated that all patients should remain optimistic because there are many medical and psychological treatments that we can use and employ that can improve the situation. And many of my patients have an excellent quality of life.
That's great. Thank you so much again, Dr. Denaro.
Thank you for inviting me to contribute to this podcast. It has been a pleasure.
That's it for this episode of the Rarely Heard Fabry Disease Podcast. Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed hearing Martinez and Dr. Denaro share their experiences. Support the podcast by subscribing, sharing it with others, or leaving a rating and review. In the next episode, we are joined first by Dr. Bechtold Wilden, who is another patient with Fabry disease and the president of a patient organization, followed by an interview with Martinez again. They will tell us about the impact of Fabry disease on psychological and emotional well-being. This podcast series is initiated and funded by Takeda Pharmaceuticals and is intended for an international audience outside the USA.